15 years ago this month, the Cato Institute launched the Cato Daily Podcast, and to mark the occasion, we're hoping to give you a token of our appreciation and ask a small favor. Visit cato.org/cdp15 to get a pair of vinyl Cato Daily Podcast stickers in the mail and give one of them to a friend who might enjoy timely libertarian perspectives on issues of the day. That website again is cato.org/cdp15. And now more than ever, thank you for listening. This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, May 19th, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. Last week's shock to oil markets, driven by a pipeline ransomware attack, highlights the freedom people and businesses need to nimbly respond to economic disruption. For millions of Americans, however, the Jones Act stands in the way of dealing with sudden shocks to our ability to transport goods, especially oil. Cato's Colin Grabow explains. Colin, the Jones Act strictly regulates the ability of Puerto Ricans and others to engage in commerce with the mainland United States. So when have we seen any kind of temporary waiver for the Jones Act?
Over, I'd say, the last 20 years, we've seen a number of temporary waivers issued for the Jones Act. These have typically been in response to natural disasters, such as hurricanes. Hurricane Katrina, for example, in 2005, and then also Hurricane Sandy, I believe, in 2012. And then 5 years later, we saw some after Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria in 2017. In addition to those waivers, we've seen a few given for more strict national security reasons. I'm thinking particularly of there was a drawdown of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve after the military action that took place in Libya related to that. So we've seen waivers of the Jones Act issued about every, say, 2 years over the past 15, 20 years or so.
What would a Jones Act waiver accomplish in the wake of this colonial pipeline outage that produced so many fuel shortages in the United States?
Well, the Colonial Pipeline supplies, I believe, something like 45% of all of the fuel consumed along the East Coast. So in the absence of that pipeline functioning, an alternative way of moving refined fuels to where they're needed is to place them on ships or other vessels and move them along the coast. Unfortunately, because of the Jones Act, we have a very limited supply of ships that are capable of doing this. There are only 57 tankers in the Jones Act fleet, of which 44 are of the type that are capable of moving refined fuels. And then some subset of those are available because most of them are already engaged in other business. So by waiving the Jones Act, this allows a far greater universe of ships to be available to transport that fuel to where it's needed in the United States.
What is the deeper reform here? Obviously, you want to get rid of it. You want to see the Jones Act done away with entirely and allow states and localities to engage in trade in a much more broad fashion, allow shippers that kind of flexibility. But in this moment in time, how do we get a waiver?
So right now, the Jones Act is front and center because, of course, we have this fuel crisis. Make no mistake, the Jones Act has been interfering in U.S. commerce and particularly the energy sector for a long time. We see distortions all over the energy landscape because of the Jones Act. For example, you mentioned Puerto Rico earlier. Puerto Rico imports 100% of its liquefied natural gas that it uses to power, to generate electricity from foreign sources. The reason why? It's impossible to ship LNG to Puerto Rico from the U.S. mainland because there are zero qualified Jones Act ships to transport it. We see a similar thing in Hawaii. Hawaii uses a fair amount of propane, what's called liquefied petroleum gas. And again, they have to buy it from as far away as West Africa because of a complete lack of appropriate ships. But even when we do have the correct ships in the fleet, owing to the expense of using Jones Act ships, it often makes no sense to use them. We've seen examples of California import crude oil from as far away as Nigeria instead of the Gulf Coast, despite the greater geographical distance, because again, once you factor in the cost, it doesn't make sense. Same thing with refineries in the Mid-Atlantic that will use oil from Africa or Europe instead of U.S. domestic oil, because once you factor in the cost of transportation, the number numbers just don't add up. In fact, when you look at the Jones Act tanker fleet and where it operates, it typically operates in places where there are no pipelines, where there's no alternative but to use a Jones Act ship. So leading example, Alaska, shipping crude oil from Alaska down to the West Coast, no pipeline. Use Jones Act tankers, and also Florida. Florida does not have access to the Colonial Pipeline, for example. There is no pipeline that serves Florida, so you do see a fair amount of Jones Act tankers used in that market. So we see distortions all over the energy landscape from this law, and I think just right now it's being brought in sharp relief, but let's keep in mind that once this crisis passes, as it inevitably will, the Jones Act will still be in place and still interfering with this market.
Beyond repeal of the Jones Act, what would allow Americans to have access to more of the world's goods at better prices more quickly?
So the Jones Act debate is often framed in binary fashion, where it's you know, either favor the status quo, you keep it, or you get rid of it. But you know, fortunately, you know, we should also keep in mind that there's a whole spectrum of options between just repealing the law and keeping the status quo. One thing we could do, for example, is perhaps the Jones Act's most notorious requirement is that, unlike any other form of transportation, the Jones Act requires that the vessel be built here in the United States. That's extremely costly because Americans are relatively very inefficient at producing these ships. For example, tanker ships are typically about quadruple the price of one bought on the international market. So instead of paying around, you know, $30, $35 million for a tanker, Americans are forced to pay $140 to $150 million. All that gets passed along to consumers and makes domestic transportation a lot less attractive. So one thing we should do is get rid of that. It's not even doing a whole lot for U.S. shipbuilding. No tanker has been built in a U.S. shipyard since 2017. There wouldn't be a lot of lost business there and be a tremendous amount of upside. Other things that should be considered are, for example, in those instances where there's no American ship available, like, for example, with Puerto Rico and LNG or Hawaii and propane, you should be able to use a foreign ship. If there's no American ship available, Americans should have the ability to still buy American goods. And this, and the Jones Act gets in the way. And lastly, I think another item that should be under consideration is exempting the non-contiguous states and territories such as Guam, Alaska, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico, which have no alternative but to use maritime transportation from the Jones Act. This is a gross, unfair tax that is placed upon these parts of the United States. And I just point out that there's a lot of talk about Puerto Rico possibly joining, becoming the 51st state. Puerto Rico has a 43% poverty rate, and it's grossly unfair that we subject them to some of the world's highest sea transportation costs. So I think those are all options that should be firmly on the table for examination by Congress.
Colin Grabow is a policy analyst at the Cato Institute. It's our 15th anniversary at the Cato Daily Podcast. In appreciation to listeners, we have a small gift for you. Visit cato.org/cdp15 to learn more.